Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Please be advised that Gen X, This Is Why, contains adult language.
Jack is a fucking hero.
Hi, and welcome to Gen X, This Is Why, the podcast where we re-examine the sometimes bizarre and often scarring media from our shared childhood. My name is Amy, and I'm a proud Gen Xer born in 1977.
And I'm her sister Jenny, born in 1974.
Today we continue our look at Walnut Grove with Little House on the Prairie, Season 3, Episode 4, Little Girl Lost. Jen?
The description reads, frustrated that Carrie has insisted on tagging along for a school assignment, Mary and Laura fail to keep a close eye on her. They live to regret this when the little girl wanders off and falls into an underground mineshaft. Spoiler alert.
Jen, what'd you think of this one?
I think season 3's been way better.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah, like they've really amped things up in season 3. It's very dramatic.
I texted Jenny about 4 minutes into the episode and I'm like, wow, this takes a dramatic turn.
Like, so far, I feel like in every episode, someone's been crying or passed out unconscious in the first 5 minutes of the episode.
Sometimes in the middle of the street, sometimes not. All right, I just want to just give a quick technical note here. I'm in the middle of redoing my office because in the year of 2020, it's really like the only reason I'm getting out of bed in the morning. So I'm redoing my office. And I'm working from home in here and doing a lot of stuff. So right now, I have everything off the walls, so it's slightly echoey. I promise that will be fixed very soon. I'm sure it's annoying, and it's annoying for me. And when I'm editing, I'm trying to fix it, but I'm just not that sophisticated of an editor.
Maybe I should redo my office / living room / gym / kitchen.
Yeah, you should. That's a great idea, Jen. Redo like 100 square feet of your house, so like a third of it.
Yeah. No, my house is bigger than that. Not much bigger. A little bigger than that.
Okay, so let's get into the episode. We open on a super zoom of a butterfly. Thanks, director Michael Landon. Did you get beginning?
Michael Landon's directing this, and it's a new writer, Paul W. Cooper.
Okay, Paul W. Cooper needs to be dragged behind a wagon in the middle of the street.
They seem to be burning through writers. And Michael Landon's always the director, so that's telling me something.
Paul W. Cooper, like, I don't know, got his writing credits out of Bazooka Joe rappers or something, because I don't know what the hell's going on here. Okay. In school, Miss Beadle introduces us, Jen, to the study of entomology, and Mary thinks this is the study of the earth.
Right. She thinks did she think it was geology?
She thought it was geology. She thought children were hatched in eggs.
Yeah, she's not good in science.
She studies a lot, but knows nothing.
Yeah.
All right. Miss Beadle wants them to start looking for insects. And then, to my chagrin, she launches into a passionate defense of bees.
really does. And they're asking all kinds of super, like, really basic questions. And then I realized, like, this is a time when people had to learn shit from school. Like, that's
right.
How you, they didn't even have a lot of books, really. Like, well, they just had to learn stuff from school.
I have a note on that. First, let me finish my bee rant here.
Okay.
She attributes motive to the bees. Like, oh, they're attacking you because they're trying to do this. And I'm like, bees don't need a motive to come at me.
They're trying to protect the queen. That is an instinct, not a motive.
They just come at me.
Okay, whatever.
How am I hurting their queen on my front porch?
There was a specific thing that I think Willie was talking about. Willie stung in the ass.
Stung in the bunghole, everybody. Oh my God.
And he's a natural comic.
He is, and she sent him to the corner for that.
He doesn't even know he's being funny. That's why it's so ingenious.
Beetle introduces them to pollination, and I wrote, Jane, to your point, no one is writing any of this shit down. Even though it's all new material and it's all new vocabulary.
Yeah, no one's writing a thing down.
And it's, like, complex. Like, she gets into the parts of the grasshopper.
And, like, I remember, you know, we had crazy books that we would be, like, there'd be diagrams and pictures. And, like, you could read from them. And we had encyclopedias. And it was still hard to learn all this stuff. And they have none of that.
Right, and they're not even writing it down on their little slates.
Nothing.
So,
I mean, writing down a slate. What's that gonna
do? Well, actually, there's an educational theory behind that. When you write things down, you remember them.
No, I know. And that's why I write copious notes all the time for everything. Oh, but copious notes, I guess, whatever. Like, you just write it on the slate and then it disappears. You can never go back to it.
So when I call you and I'm rambling on about something, are you taking copious notes?
No, because I don't care about that.
So wait, let's talk about, they live in a world where their knowledge of the world is completely dependent on their memory.
More or less, yeah.
I would be fucked.
You would be. Although I think people then just had less mental stimulus. Like, maybe they were more focused. They must have been.
Maybe.
Like, we're just so bombarded with information now. It's like we could never keep all of it in our head.
Did I tell you the other day that I felt something on my head and I went like this? Guys, you can't see me, but I'm like brushing my little bit of hair that I have. I went like this, and I pulled out a spider.
Oh, my God.
Gross. Like, what is happening to me? God. 2020. Okay, and then I wrote, Miss Beetle also unjustly punishes Willie. That is not necessary.
Because she thinks he's being an asshole, but he's just, like, naturally funny. Like, he doesn't even have to try.
The dude is telling a story about his trauma. How he went to the outhouse in the middle of the day and was stung by a bee.
But it's all his brilliant delivery. She said something about their behind or something.
Yeah, and he goes, that's where the bee stung me in the outhouse. Okay, so this may have been a funny light part. Get ready for this shit to turn dark real fast.
It just takes a turn.
There is no transition. Nope. There is no, it's just boom, turn on dime. Okay, here we go. At Hanson's, some drifter wanders in and begs Hanson for a job. His name is Mr. Loudy.
I just have, who's this scrub?
I call him a drunk drifter the entire time. Mr. Loudy is his name. I'm going to go back and forth between drifter and Loudy, but that's what I'm talking about. He swears he has changed and that he has sobered up. So clearly there's a backstory.
We're dropped into the middle. This feels very bunny-ish. Like, we're dropped into the middle of, like, something that has happened that everyone seems to know except us.
It's like a Wolfman situation. Hanson sends the guy packing. And also, I would like to note, this scene really triggered my husband, Timmy, because Charles is working that saw, that table saw, and really almost cut his hand off.
No safety guards.
Yeah. We watched the scene twice. Timmy's like, he really almost cut his hand off. Which, I wonder if Michael Landon insisted, like, that be real, and then he'd be all manly and try to do this on the set.
I wonder, I mean, it has to be somewhat real, right? We see it with our eyes.
He's cutting the wood.
We see it with our eyes. Then again, 2020, even if we see it with our eyes, is it real?
Nope. So the drifter then assaults Hanson. And it's revealed they know each other from 20 years ago. The dude grabs Hanson and yells, I'm just going to verbatim this. It's because she married me, isn't it? Isn't it? And Hanson replies, no, it's because you killed her. Jen?
Super dramatic. Like, okay, where did this come from? Whoa.
Wait, it gets better, okay? Now, this is the same guy who just said, I've changed, I'm sober.
I want a job, because I'm sober.
The drifter dude shakes a bottle of alcohol in Hanson's face and gets his revenge by destroying his own sobriety.
Well, I think he was drinking all along. He's just like, oh, some things never change. It's like, I'll show you. I'm still a drunk. Like, what is, I don't understand this point, this
I don't argument. Know. I thought he was like, I'm 5 days sober, but now screw you. I'm going to ruin that.
Oh, I didn't realize he was only like 5 days.
Jenny, he's spite relapsing.
This guy storms off. Hansen storms off. Everybody storms off.
Everybody storms off. I'll go far for spite. I don't know if I'll sabotage my own sobriety for spite.
Mm, whatever.
I might. So then I wrote, this was supposed to be an episode about entomology and butterflies.
Well, and I saw Pa in the background watching this. I'm like, how's Pa going to fix this? Because so, you know he's going to try.
So, of course, Charles has witnessed this. Jenny, if you saw your boss at, insert tech company name here, crying after this dramatic...
Wait, I got a picture of this.
This dramatic episode, would you approach them?
Nope. No. I just give them their space and time to get over whatever they had to get over.
Read the room, Charles.
Yeah, when you storm into a private place and close a door, that usually means you don't want to talk to anyone.
After you've had a super vulnerable conversation in front of everybody. Yep. Yeah. Jen, Charles goes right in there and asks Hansen if he's okay. And Hansen is crying. And here's the story we get. You ready?
I'm ready.
This drifter used to work with the railroad as a construction engineer. Good money, good job. Then Hansen says she was beautiful. Charles apparently knows about this already.
Charles knows this story. He's in Monaco Grove 3 years, so he didn't live there when this happened. So this is town lore, apparently.
I mean, yeah. Charles says it was an accident, not the drifter's fault, but Hansen disagrees. He saved himself and his little girl, but he left her in the house to die. His Ellen. I don't know if that's supposed to mean anything to us.
It's not a clear story.
Hansen then remembers this incredible display of vulnerability is not appropriate in the workplace and reminds Charles to get back to work. Like, Charles just snaps back into it. Or Hansen just snaps out of it. It's like, get back to work.
It sounds like there's some kind of love triangle, or that there was some kind of like this... This chick left Hansen for this dude or something like that. There was some kind of...
You didn't think it was his daughter?
No. What?
I thought it was Hansen's daughter.
No, dumbass. No, because he says she married you.
He didn't say, is it because she married me over you?
Yeah, that's totally the... Yes. They're like the same age too.
I don't know. I didn't know at first. I was confused because we have zero context.
No, I think it was some kind of love triangle.
All right. Well, it was. We know that. We learned that. Spoiler alert. Mm. At the Ingalls house, Laura and Mary come home and Caroline is ironing. Jen, when's the last time you ironed something?
I have ironed things in the last couple of years.
Yeah? How many things?
Like a handful. I have a couple shirts that I would have to iron because they'd get all weird.
Hmm.
Just like the edges of them. Like the, you know, like they were like...
How about Graham?
I have material I have to iron. But let me tell you, in the last 8 months, I haven't ironed a damn thing.
No.
I haven't even had anything that I had to hang dry in the last 8 months. Everything can go in the dryer now.
Our grandmother ironed so much. First of all, she would wash all of her clothes on Saturday. She would hang them on the line, bring them all in, and iron them one by one, and then put them away.
She used to iron her sheets.
She did this in February. She would stand her frozen clothes around the kitchen.
I remember that.
And just frost them with the iron.
That was so weird.
One day, I go down and she's ironing with the big rubber glove on. And I say, Graham, what's wrong? She's like, my iron is broken. It's burning my hand. So I put a glove on.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I immediately go to the store and get her a new iron. I bring it down. She puts it under the sink and says, I'll use that when this one stops working completely. And when she died, we cleaned out that iron. It was still under the sink.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, people were just tougher then.
And definitely more frugal.
Oh my God. She was like the Caroline Ingalls.
Wow.
She was tough. Okay. So I never iron. That, I feel like that's a generational thing. I just don't iron.
I'm mean, if you, certain things I have to iron, but it's super rare.
But like, you don't iron all of your clothes.
Oh, God, no, 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 no. I only iron things that are super wrinkled because of what material they are.
Exactly. Okay.
No, I don't iron my jeans or like jeans. What are jeans? Like I've worn jeans in like 8 months.
The girls grab jars to catch insects for their homework. They've been assigned by Miss Beetle to go out and collect bugs. Carrie opens her super annoying trash mouth and says, I want to go with you.
Fucking little sisters.
Okay. Caroline agrees, but Jen, who's not happy about it?
Mary is pissed, and I don't blame her. I'd be too.
And let me tell you something. This triggered me. Because I, as a little sister, you are just a burden all the time to your big sister. Yep. Like, because you just want to go, but you're a burden.
Yep, that's right.
And you're always made to feel that way. Currently. Okay.
And as an older sister, you can never have any fun because your little sister always ruins it.
Right, of course. Caroline walks into town and she runs into Miss Beetle. And I don't even know why this scene exists, but it exists. She's like, oh, my girls are so excited to go catch insects. So they're gone. And then Willie shows her the insect collection that he got from England.
I love how Willie solved this. Like, he solved the problem.
Yep. He found, like, what do you call that? Like, almost like a taxidermist.
Yeah, it's like a taxidermied butterflies.
Yeah. And he's like, I got these. These came from my store, so they're mine. So I got them. Miss Beetle's like, no, not going to work, Willie. I'll see you at school tomorrow.
You have to get them yourself. And everyone's going far away to get these. And he looks on the back and he goes, these were made in England. So they're from England. So, so they're
somebody
from
far away.
He's Dude, great. He's going places.
He's great. Willie's going to own this fucking town.
He's like, I'm done with this assignment.
Yep. In a field somewhere, Laura and Mary are working hard catching bugs. Oh, God, give me the strength to get through this next part.
Well, wait, I have a question, Aim. Can you just give your kids some cheesecloth and wire and let them go wild?
No. I'll catch them on their iPhones sitting in the clearing. The butterfly nets will be on the ground next to them, and they'll be on their iPads or iPhones in the middle of the woods.
If I got this cheesecloth, I'd be making fresh mozzarella with that
calico. I'm sure you would be. I'm sure you would be. Laura and Mary come back to the clearing where they had left Carrie with... as guardian of the jars.
That was a mistake.
Guess what she did, Jen? What did she fucking do?
She let all the bugs loose and she was staring in a creepy way.
Like she was going to eat
a grasshopper. And I'm like, Carrie is not okay. Like there's something wrong with her. She is not okay.
I wrote she's eating a bug and acting like a weirdo.
Something's not right.
She's in some kind of, there's two people in this episode who are in some kind of trance. Yeah. She's one of them.
Yep.
All right, Mary is super Dude, pissed.
Let me just tell you, if this was me, I would have been slapping you. There would have been violence. I think Mary keeps her cool considering what has just happened.
She does. Mary's super pissed and they head off again to catch more bugs. Meanwhile,
they head off again to redo their assignment all over again from the beginning. Let's be clear.
Meanwhile, Carrie wanders off again and chases a butterfly right into, I wrote, a mine shaft, but they were calling it a well at first.
And Jack is barking at her he's barking at the butterfly first.
I want to pause right here to tell you how I had to watch this episode.
Oh God, I can't imagine.
I have a dog, everybody, I have a dog named Nellie.
Ironically.
She has problems. She's not well.
She's not okay.
She thinks our TV is a window. And when she sees animals, dogs, babies, creatures, she goes bananas. And like, she's a big dog. So like when she goes bananas, it's intense. So whenever she hears the music for Little House on the Prairie, she starts barking.
She's triggered by the music?
Yes. Wow. So I have to put her in a separate room. So when there's like a horse-centric or jack-centric episode, I have to put her in a separate room.
Oh, the bunny episodes ought to be a nightmare.
So I put her in the bedroom. But now, usually it's okay because horses don't make any sounds.
Right.
But Jack was barking. So she was barking. So I had to mute every time Jack was on and just read my closed captioning. So that's what I'm suffering through for you guys. Just so you know.
Is the other dog in the living room? Like, what is this dog's problem?
Well, that's the issue. So the puppy doesn't really bark at anything. But last night, he started following her lead a little bit.
Oh, no.
I was like, no. Okay. So Jack actually acts like a dog. And he pulls a Lassie and he barks, runs and gets help.
Timmy stuck in the well. Yeah. He pulls a Lassie.
Yep. Meanwhile, in town, Caroline heads to see Paul at work to get a ride home. She tries to say hi to Hansen, and he completely ignores her.
And was he limping? He was limping.
I don't know, but he just ignores her. Like, I could see if he was just like, oh, hey, what's up? And she was like, oh, he's moody. Like, that's how I would have written it. Like, what's wrong, Hansen? He doesn't seem like himself. But he just walks right past her.
It was super weird.
Charles says, Wendell Loudy came by today. Nothing is ever going to change between those two. Really, Charles, why don't you elaborate? Because we have no fucking idea what you're talking about. Back at the field, Jack starts barking like crazy again. And Laura decides something isn't right because she's the empath. She's the smart one. She realizes something's happening.
And Mary's like, Jack always acts like this. Like, he's an idiot.
They both head off to follow Jack. Okay. Cut back to Charles and Caroline heading home on the wagon. When what did they come across, Jen?
That dude laying on the side of the road.
Remember a couple weeks ago I told you the story about me seeing a guy on the side of the road?
Yes.
Except my guy was like awake and waving to people. This guy's passed out.
He's passed on the side of the road and he only had like a small fifth of alcohol. Like, how did he pass out?
Pass me out. I would be passed out from that.
He's a seasoned alcoholic, though.
It's true. It's true. So Charles pulls over the wagon and hops off. And he's trying to, like, wake the guy up. And the dude reveals that after the accident, we still don't know what kind of accident. I'm assuming fire? House fire?
I'm thinking some kind of fire or some shit.
Jen, he started drinking, and Hansen, the string puller, had his kids taken away from him.
That's why I think it's not his daughter.
Well, that's when I was like, oh, wait, that would have been Hansen's granddaughter.
Yeah, and he probably would have taken them.
Charles tries to bring this dude home for supper because why not?
Why not?
Why not? You have three young daughters. Why not bring home a crazy drunk?
I mean, he doesn't seem crazy, but he's like, he's mean and he's yelling at Charles.
He's mean.
Like, I feel like, fuck you, dude.
No.
Yeah.
All right. Then in an unnatural turn of tone and mood, the dude says his own daughter is a grown woman now and has written to him and she's coming to see him. Like, he just flips on a dime.
Yep. Yeah. Just, it's totally fine now.
He can't have her seeing him like this. He needs clean clothes and a job. And Charles says, it's no use looking good on the outside and rotting away on the inside.
Yeah. Okay.
Get that? Then he brings him home. And I wrote right here, prediction. This drifter is going to save Carrie.
Charles going to give him an Oprah Dr. Phil makeover. That's what it sounded like when he said, you can't be.
I need new clothes.
The outside and not the inside.
Yep. Meanwhile, Mary and Laura see Carrie has fallen down the well and they run in a panic to get Pa.
Well, Jack leads them to the well and barks at the well.
Jack does a good job, Jenny. Can you give him some compliments here?
Jack goes into hero mode. He does. Jack flew into hero mode when he ran into the well.
Speaking of hero mode, Laura comes across Ma, Pa, and the weirdo drifter on the main road. And Pa tells her, get in and take them to the hole. And I wrote, da-da-dum, it's hero mode. Charles drives that wagon.
In the wagon.
With the same carelessness, we drove our parents' cars on dirt roads when we were 17 and 18. Oh. Like, you know when you used to go down dirt road in mom and dad's car? You didn't give a fuck. You drove 40.
Well, and I said that Laura gets in the back with, and she's got a stranger to chat up. She'll be happy.
And he, like, pulls her into the wagon. Oh, God. Anyway, zero caution. Charles is flying across, like, hilly terrain, rocks. Like, he doesn't give a fuck if those people bounce out of the back of the wagon.
Right.
They just leave Jack on the roadside, by the way.
Oh, that's right. He got screwed on a ride again.
Yeah. He's like, I fucking helped you assholes. Because Jack was with Laura.
They would have never known what happened if it wasn't for Jack.
No, never.
They would have not even known what happened to her. They probably would have been searching the woods. Jack is a fucking hero.
Whoa. This stranger's like, I didn't sign up for this shit. I'm a drunk. Now you're bouncing me all over the place, taking me to save your kid. Okay. At the hole, they scream for Carrie. And suddenly this kid, who was semi-articulate before, can barely utter, Mama! Mama!
No, she's four. She's 2.5 years old again.
Like, suddenly she's 8 months old. Charles tells Loudy to lower him down. And you expect us to believe that he lowers Charles completely down.
I know. You know how hard that would be? Do you know how hard that would be?
All right. Anyway, Charles can't reach. He comes back up and runs to grab a shovel. Loudy chases him and tells him, look, I'm an engineer, dude. Digging won't help because Carrie will get buried. And then Loudy time travels to 1986, watches the team of engineers save baby Jessica, then goes back to Walnut Grove with the exact same plan because that is how they save her.
I said they're going to baby Jessica this shit.
Yep. They set the same plan. They dug a hole 6 feet away. Then they're going to go under her and dig over. So Loudy happens to be an engineer, knows his shit. He sends Charles into town for supplies. Oh, wait, Jen, and a bottle of hooch.
Okay, so I was like, he probably, to be fair, if he's a raging alcoholic, he probably just needs it to not go into withdrawal symptoms.
Yeah. He needs to even out.
Right.
In town, Charles' bestie, Edwards, is at Olson's. That's convenient because that's where Charles goes. Nels gives Charles all of the supplies he needs. And Mr. Edwards must be like, I have to save your fucking kid again?
Again.
Like,
another kid.
My kids, I have three of them. They're fine. They're sitting in a tree reading poetry. Like, I have to give to Edwards here. He is ride or die.
They had to save... Oh, God, what's his name? Carl.
It's the return of Carl Jr.
They had to save him once.
They only had to save him, though, because he was with the Ingalls.
Yeah.
Nels then tells Willie to go ring the alarm bell.
I was so excited by all this. There's an emergency bell. There's an emergency procedure.
No, Jen, it's the school bell.
I'm impressed, though. They have a procedure, apparently.
Yes.
It's like a volunteer fire company.
I guess. So they gather up a bunch of men. And when they all go to the site, they start digging. Loudy's going all type A on this. And Grace comes along to comfort the women folk, which I thought was nice.
Carolyn's having a fucking breakdown. But let me say, I have an index card.
On what?
So I want to paint a picture of how horrifying this experience can be, just so that you get an idea of why Carolyn's freaking out so bad.
Oh, are you going to tell me about kids dying in wells?
No. Okay. This person survived and they're a male, female. I mean, they're a grown male, 60 years old. But this just happened in Arizona. And let me tell you the harrowing experience that this man had. So in October of 2018, an Arizona man, John Waldle, had to be rescued after he fell down a 100-foot mine shaft while he was searching for gold.
Oh, boy. Reverend Alden would have a lot to say about that. He would shame him immediately. Yeah.
So he was on rigging to actually, like lower into the mine.
Yeah.
And the rigging device broke. And so he was down 50 feet. The device breaks. He drops another 50 feet in a free fall. 50 feet's high.
That's a lot.
So he drops another 50 feet, break, and he hears his leg break. On his way down, he was trying to slow his fall by grabbing onto the rope, and he ripped all the skin off his hands because he was falling so fast. So,
wait, do we need any other kind of trigger warnings here besides ooziness and goriness?
So his leg is broken, the skin's off his hands, and he had to make a splint out of a stick to to support his leg because he started bleeding and stuff. Crazy. So while he's trying to figure out how he's going to get out of here, and like this is a dude that like does these types of things, like he's an outdoorsy person. So and he's having he's struggling with this. So he's trying to figure out what to do. He sees a rattlesnake slither down the side of the well or the side of the mine and had to beat it to death with a stick. Let me repeat that. He beat a snake to death with a stick, a rattlesnake.
A rattlesnake's impressive. Like, in all fairness, I beat a snake to death with a broom in my laundry room once.
What was it, though?
But it was like a little
black snake?
Yeah.
Yeah. A rattlesnake is fierce.
And I feel bad that I did it. I was just in full-blown panic mode.
Well, you probably beat a snake that wouldn't bite you and was not poisonous.
No, I should have just picked him up and took him outside. I'm sorry, snake.
This guy doesn't have this option. So this is he's in survival mode. So he's beating the snake to death with a stick. Over the next 2 days, because he's stuck in there for 2 days, as he becomes increasingly dehydrated and starts to hallucinate, he's faced with two more rattlesnakes and has to kill them with a stick.
Jesus Christ.
He said he's going to go back there, though, with someone else because he saw gold while he was down there.
At what point are you just like, take me, just take me.
He survived.
Let the rattlesnakes take me.
He's got a good story now, but could you imagine? So this is what could be happening in Carolyn's mind as she loses her shit.
Well, Carrie almost ate a bug. So I don't know if she would know what to do if a rattlesnake came at her. She'd probably hug it.
She's a kid. She'd get bit by it. There's no question.
Okay. They lower a pipe, Jenny, down to talk to Carrie. But Caroline is in some weird haze and doesn't respond to anything.
Well, that's not why they lower the pipe down. They lower the pipe down to put
to give her air. Yeah. But, like, 10 people are like, Caroline, Caroline, Caroline. Like, I get it. But you don't need that long shot of her for, like, 7 minutes.
I'm not buying what they're doing with Carolyn's character here. She would not break down like this.
No, she wouldn't. She wouldn't.
I don't believe it.
She'd be amazing. Mm-hmm. Finally, she snaps out of it and she makes contact with Carrie. Like, she hears her crying or something. Which, again, same thing with baby Jessica. Like, this is so weird.
It's so weird because this was before baby Jessica.
Yes.
This was 1977.
Yes. Oh, the best year ever.
Oh, God.
Hanson and Doc Baker show up, Jen. Yep. Are you happy to see your boy, Doc Baker?
Thank God Doc Baker's there.
So,
someone's in crisis and he's just rolling around to the site. Like, they could have pulled her up an hour ago. Where was he?
God. There's some tension between Loudy and Hanson, Drifter and Hanson. Hanson takes over. He just takes over.
Because Loudy was running this job site.
Like, he was doing a good job. He was. So Hanson just takes over and Loudy just walks away to go drink. And I wrote, he just leaves the job site?
Yeah, Hanson took his post.
I guess so. All right. It's now night and we have the return of Carl's Jr.
Of Carl's Jr.
I've just embraced it now and I call him Carl's Jr. Mary and Carl's Jr. are sitting around feeling guilty. Another scene of Mary and Carl's Jr. feeling guilty and trying to decide who's to blame.
They should not be friends because they just go through this guilt spiral together. Yep. And I just have Mary, this is your fault. As the older sister, you're in charge by default. So it's always your fault.
Yeah, I agree.
Even if Laura did it, technically you were in charge of this group.
I agree. The team is tired, Jen. The men are getting weary. They haven't heard Carrie's voice in over 2 hours. Caroline, mid-breakdown.
I just don't buy this. This is so bad. This is not written in accordance with her character at all.
Charles pulls her over. He's like, come here with me. Let's go sit down. And who shows up, Jen? Public enemy number one.
Oh, Rev Alden.
Mm-hmm. Reverend Alden. And she starts, like, being hysterical at him, and it looked like they were going to embrace and kiss for a minute. It was really weird. It was weird. Then Caroline runs into Miss Beetle and pulls a Harriet. Starts freaking out on Miss Beetle.
She starts yelling at Miss Beetle. It's her fault for signing this. I'm like, she didn't sign this to Carrie.
She didn't tell you to let your little kid go. So then Caroline does come back around to blaming herself. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I shouldn't let her go. And then I wrote, we haven't seen Caroline this sweaty since she almost cut off her leg.
Well, and I have to say that I just wrote down that teachers take all the shit. Even then, they take all the shit all the time.
You don't have to get me going on my passionate defense of teachers. Although this teacher defends bees. So I don't know if I can defend her.
I also wrote down, thank God we have bulldozers and backhoes. A sentence I never thought I would say.
And I would like to say, once again, Reverend Alden, useless.
Good job, dude. Good job. Useless. Great job there. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Suddenly in the background, we hear Doc Baker's voice. And he screams, I've broken through.
You know Jenny? What else we keep hearing in the background, though?
What?
We keep hearing Hansen yell, "I need two fresh men in the hole."
We're just going to let that lie.
That was kind of funny.
Jenny, of all the men in Walnut Grove, here is a list of people I would choose before Doc Baker to get in a hole and dig my child to safety. Pa Ingalls, sober Mr. Edwards, drunk Mr. Edwards, Nels, Hansen, the drifter drunk, Willie, Dumbledore the blacksmith, Caroline, who's stronger than any man there, Laura, the Ben Franklin wannabe, Carl's Jr., John Jr., Johnny Cash the criminal, Johnny Johnson with or without shoes,
Sprig,
the dickhead neighbor with the cow, Jack, and even Reverend Alden. Then, if all those men were unavailable, I might put Doc Baker in that hole.
Well, the thing is, he's the only doctor in town. You cannot have anything happen to him. He should not be in that hole. He should be sitting up there waiting in case someone gets hurt. His job.
Do you think anyone in town can't pick up the slack of diagnosing a broken leg?
That's true.
By looking at it?
That's true. Anyone can do that. Carolyn's better qualified.
Right. Caroline just reads the Bible to understand what to do with medical procedures.
How could that go wrong?
Old Testament only. Doc Baker can't find anything. It's dark down here. Get him out of the hole, Hansen. Get him out of the hole. Put two fresh men down the hole, not Doc Baker. He's screaming for more rope, another lantern, and he says Carrie must have slipped further down. Everyone is sweating and panting.
And Carolyn looks at Charles with this look of, fix this.
She does. She really does. And I'm not going to lie. His response look, hot. Okay. Because his response look was like, I'm on it. All right. So we have this long silence. And then Caroline gets up and walks over to the air pumper. What is that thing called? We used to have one for the fire.
A bellows. It's a bellows.
Bellows.
It's because moms don't quit.
Right. She stood up and that set the tone. Everybody's like, you're right. We're getting back up. We're doing this shit. So she's not giving up. So Hansen then whips the men back into shape. Let's go. Tone shift. With this tone shift, we see Loudy again. Now he's reading the letter from his daughter. And he decides, Jen, back on the wagon, throwing away his booze.
Yep. He's not drinking anymore.
So when he does, he spots a piece of coal.
Oh, thank God we have all these floodlights.
Yeah, thank God. He realizes then that Carrie is in a mine shaft. And he tries to tell Hansen to stop digging. And Hansen's like, nope, you're just drunk. I could smell it on you. And he's like begging Hansen, like, you're going to get this little girl killed.
Right, and maybe some other people.
Yeah. Hansen's like, nope, doing it.
And he also says if it's a mine, it's a vent for a mine. So it's where air comes out of the mine. That means there's an entrance to this mine somewhere. Right.
Yep. So Carl's Jr. speaks up and says he knows there's a mine nearby. What was he doing in the mine, Jen? Lighting off?
God knows. He is always up to trouble.
God. He leads the men off to find it. Meanwhile, Hansen continues the dangerous operation that he was just told might kill a four-year-old.
Well, I said Nels is going to be out of stock for a decade.
I know they have tons of shit out there.
God.
And he just gave it all to Charles for nothing.
Yeah.
So switch to Edwards, Charles, Drifter, and Carl's Jr. walking into a mine. The lighting is so bad I can't tell. Like they you just can't see anything. You see
that's accurate.
Right. You see them coming across the screen with lanterns. It's actually kind of a cool
shot. Makes more sense than the floodlights that are around the job site.
Yes. So they find the mine and Loudy tells them he's paced off 1,200 yards. He's all given directions and measurements. How does he fucking know anything?
He's an engineer.
How does he know? First of all, what is there, 3 feet in a yard?
Yeah.
So not only is he counting his feet, but now he's like multiplying that by three? Like, what are you doing,
multiplying
dude?
By three is not hard.
It's very hard. It's very difficult.
So they're 2,000 yards away. It's just over a mile.
Jenny, did you notice that the mine was impeccable? Like, it was super clean.
Yeah. Yeah. Super weird.
This is a boarded up mine that's been there for decades.
Yep.
Because when they were talking about finding the mine, like, Hansen's like, there's no mines in Walnut Grove. And Hansen's
been there like 30 years or 40, Hansen, 50 years. Yeah,
he was like cracked. His egg was cracked in the soil of Walnut Grove. He's been there forever.
So it had to be before him. Like, it had to be early 1800s.
Yeah. Here's something. Jenny and I come from a town that is huge with coal.
Mm-hmm.
Coal mining. And they actually call it Scranton, Pennsylvania, the city built on toothpicks.
Yeah. Remember, so, there'd always be mine cave-ins when we were growing
always.
Up. Always. It was crazy. Sinkholes would open up all the time. Super weird.
I would be driving with Graham, and she'd be like pointing, that's where the mine entrance was. This is where the other mine. Could you imagine working in a mine?
No.
No.
That was tough work.
Guys, if you work in a mine, we salute you. Tough work. We salute you. Okay. They get to the air shaft and find one of Carrie's shoes. So they know it's the right one.
Yep, because it would be weird if there was a shoe there for another reason.
And meanwhile, there's a ton of dirt falling down on them because Hansen's digging.
Yep.
And meanwhile, there's a ton of dirt coming down on them because, Jen, Hansen's a fucking boss and he won't listen to anybody.
So back at the site.
Meanwhile, back at the site, there's a collapse.
There's a collapse, yeah.
And not only does Hansen almost kill Carrie and Charles and everybody in there, he almost killed Doc Baker.
He almost killed Doc Baker. And then Doc Baker comes up and he's like, it just all collapsed. It's no use. Wow. You're an inspiring doctor.
Oh, wow. Okay. So imagine this. Caroline has no idea that the men took off for the coal mine.
Yeah.
Right. She was not privy to that conversation. Nope. You know, Hansen didn't run back and say they're going to go look for a mine because they think she's in an air mine.
They couldn't tell Hansen this.
Right. So they just left. Yep. And Caroline hears a mine collapse.
Yeah.
And her doctor comes up and says,
no use.
I guess the kid's dead.
No use.
She's gone. They're all dead. Caroline is like, she just can't even think straight. And then I wrote, later, when she's sleeping, because she appears to be sleeping.
She's just collapsed. She's like laying down, like giving, like, this is so not her character. This is so out of character.
Jenny, she was stronger when she actually lost a child.
Yeah.
She was tough as nails. Yes. Through the Charles Jr. incident.
I know. That's why this doesn't make any sense at all.
Ergus Borgnine on the mountain. I'd put him down the mine before Doc Baker.
Jonathan?
Yes, Jonathan. But I have a question for you, Jenny.
Mm.
Carrie's how many feet down?
We think they said she fell another 30. They about 60, we think, by now.
Okay. Loudy estimated that the air shaft was how many feet? 100, I thought he said. But it wasn't because Charles was able to reach up and grab her.
They didn't know. They could be up to that. They could be up to 100 feet deep.
Question. Why didn't Charles yell up?
I don't know.
Like, to assure everyone, I got her.
Oh, you wouldn't have heard him. There's no way.
They were hearing Carrie. You could barely hear
her, but they had that pipe. That's why they could hear her. Because they had the little, like, because they're amplifying the sound through the pipe. They wouldn't have heard him.
Put this on the list of feats to be accomplished. I will yell and make my voice carry over 100 yards.
That's different.
100 feet.
Different acoustics. You got to do it through dirt, basically.
We can replicate this.
We're going to dig a 60-foot hole in your yard.
We're going to replicate this.
All right. Tell Timmy. We're going to dig a 60-foot hole in his yard. See what he thinks.
I'm going to tell Timmy, passively dig a 60-foot hole. Okay. So Caroline is, I don't know, sleeping, passed out. I don't know. And Charles emerges from the darkness.
The scene was so ridiculous.
With Carrie in tow.
And now his hero squad. He has like a little mini hero squad.
He does have a little squad behind him. And Charles Jr.'s in it now.
I feel like he has a hero mentor. The dude.
The dude
did all this.
The Charles dude did all this. It. Yes. So I wrote, at the end of the day, Jenny, of course Charles has to save this motherfucker.
Right, and it's this big dramatic thing.
Now Hansen has to walk over to Loudy and apologize because, I don't know, this forgives 20 years of bad blood?
No, because Hansen would have killed everyone. Oh, that's true. And Loudy saved everyone.
He also admits Loudy was right. It was because she married him.
And when they're standing there next to each other, you can tell that Loudy was like the more attractive strapping man.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's what it's about. Like Hansen's just jealous.
Hansen's like kind of short compared to this dude.
And he's like short and angry. Yeah. And like, I guess around that time, he wasn't as successful like he is now.
Right. Like now, I mean, he could just click his fingers and the babes are brought to him. He loved her, Jen. They both did. And then Hansen offers him a job and he accepts.
What a mess.
And I wrote the end. This is not my why, but I wrote, this is why you never fuck with Lars Hansen. People will die.
Because he's stupid was why people they were going to die.
He's going to do shit his way and that's it. Okay. So it was quite dramatic.
And I feel like it wasn't accurate that Carrie was completely unscathed. Like, she would have something broken or, like, something.
She took quite a fall.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did we see Doc Baker examine her? I mean,
he didn't even come over. He's like, oh, cool. I'm gonna go out of town.
That's because he can just diagnose her looking at her 20 feet away. Oh, she's got broken arm. She might have a slightly cracked rib. She'll be all right. It's healing up nice. Or he'll pull in Edwards and just be like, I don't know. We'll see if she wakes up tomorrow. We'll see what happens. Full disclosure, I did that with the cat. Or with the dog.
What happened to the dog?
Our puppy got into Samantha's room and ate one of her ant traps.
Oh, shit.
And I was it was like those little raid ones.
Oh, no.
And I was kind of angry at Samantha, so I just kind of said to her, well, we'll see if the dog wakes up tomorrow.
No pressure. Have a good night's sleep.
It's like we're always on them about keeping their doors shut. You know what I mean? She left her door open. The dog got in there. He got the ant trap. So we just had to see. And guess what? He did wake up and he was okay. Because I secretly did Google it, make sure I didn't have to take him to the bed. Okay. So, Jenny, whose fault is this?
So, I want to say it's Carrie's fault for being four. But you can't blame a four-year-old for this. Mm-mm. So I'm going to say it's whoever closed that mine, like whoever closed up and boarded up that mine, whoever was responsible for that, whatever mining company, they are liable for this because that shit was not covered. They should have like made that a better.
I'm blaming Carrie. She's an asshole. Carrie's an asshole.
I didn't blame a four-year-old for this.
I'm blaming Carrie. She's an asshole. She didn't listen to her sister's directive, which was to just sit there and look at the jars. If she had not let the bugs out of the jar, they would have went home then. Everything would have been fine.
You could say it was Carolyn's fault for letting her go.
No, I'm looking at the direct action.
Oh, okay, so you're not looking at the like flap of the butterfly wing.
The reason they had to...
They showed a butterfly at the beginning of this.
Butterfly effect. The reason they had to leave her alone the second time was because she ruined everything.
That's true.
Yeah.
Maybe it was that butterfly's fault that was flying around that she was chasing.
Maybe that butterfly is like the soul of Mrs. Sanderson or mine or something.
It's flying around like it led her to the... To the mine. Yeah,
maybe Mrs. Sanderson doesn't want.
Oh my God. Mine. Led her to the mine and killed her.
Because let's face it, there's only room for one cute 4-year old in this town, and it's Alicia.
So let me get this straight. You think that a butterfly was inhabited by
Alicia? Wait, back up. Not I think. We came to this together.
All right. So we think. That one possible explanation for what happened is Alicia's dog, mine, who died a couple episodes ago, the soul of that dog inhabited a butterfly that then led Carrie over to a mine shaft. That's where you get the clue. To kill her because she's competition for Alicia.
Yeah. That sounds good, right?
I mean, West Craig did not write this. Did not write this episode.
Wow.
I did not expect that. I did not expect that.
That's where we're at. That's where we're at.
I think it's a perfectly plausible explanation.
Why not? Okay. So at the end of every episode, Jenny and I will look back at the episode and think about a theme or a trauma or a lesson we took from the original material, either the first time we saw it or maybe on the rewatch. We call it our why. It's designed to finish the statement, Gen X, this is why. Jenny, what is your why of this episode?
So this is why you never, ever, 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 ever take your little sister anywhere with you. They always ruin everything.
Oh, well, you're not wrong.
Was a perfectly nice trip to Willow Lake. And I think some of that stuff in the beginning where Carolyn's talking to Miss Beetle for no reason and stuff, it feels like it's a good day and people are mm-hmm. having fun and like everything's okay. They always do that before a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of make like they over dramatize how happy everyone is, and then it's like disaster.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to tell you something. I empathized with Mary here.
Whoa.
I know. And I am the eternal little sister. Like, I will always defend little sisters. But I kind of felt for the big sister because let me tell you something. That's what it's like to be a mother.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
constantly yeah. responsible for this thing's safety.
No wonder why I didn't want to be a mother.
I wonder if there's some kind of psychological. I'm sure there's a study
on
the ratio of people not choosing not to have children in relation to birth order.
But I think it probably goes both ways, right?
It probably does, yeah.
Like if you, because I know a lot of older sisters who raised their siblings practically or did raise their siblings like that. And they want a family because they're used to that. Like that's their thing. Yeah, nuts.
I don't know. But I did feel like I felt like I would have, I don't know. I can't explain it. Like I never felt that as a younger sister.
That you were responsible for my safety?
Never.
No. Never. No, when we were watching Runaway Caboose. You're like, why didn't Mary jump off? I'm like, she's not going to leave Laura on the train. Because you think that way. You're not, you can't just, yeah. it is like being a parent. You can't just like be like, later, good luck.
But do you feel like siblings take that on themselves or did mom and dad put that on you?
I feel like mom and dad put that on you. They would always be like, keep an eye on your sister, keep an eye on your sister. Like just for little things, you know, like yeah. if they walked away or, you know, yeah. whatever. They were always saying that. Always. Mm,
that must have yeah. sucked.
Yeah, it did. Yep. And then you wonder why big sisters are so resentful and hateful.
Well, I will say there's a lot of suckiness with being a younger sister because you always feel like a burden. Like, oh, I can remember you would actually say to people, I had to take her with me.
And then when I started to drive, I like the whole deal was like I had to drive you places.
Oh, like, you made me pay you.
I had to like take you. I was probably, you were probably like amazed at how long gas lasted and how cheap it was when yeah, you right. started to like, yeah. put it in your own car.
Yeah. Okay. My why is this is why I hate bugs, period. End of story. They're responsible for everything. That's it.
You hate bugs. Okay.
I hate bugs. Look at the trouble they've caused.
That's true. This was all bug related.
We don't need that butterfly. We don't need the soul of mine. I had nothing else for this. I will say I was close to writing my why about being a big sister, like how I felt bad for Mary.
Yeah, because all the pressure's on her.
Yeah. Like, could you imagine the guilt? Okay, you're Mary. Like, you were my bigger sister. Not much really happened to me.
No.
Imagine if you're Mary. You've had your sister on a runaway caboose. Your other sister fell down a mine shaft.
Before, like Mary's failing at this. Like this shit's a mess.
Nellie is bullying the fuck out of her. We know Carrie gets sucked away in a hot air balloon later.
Yeah.
Like yeah. Mary.
Yeah, she doesn't have control of the situation at all.
At all. I kind of feel bad for her. Okay, so Jenny, why don't you tell everyone what's coming up next?
So the next, I think we're going to do this one. I'm just going to make a decision. Because I remember
this
one.
Do we need to put a poll somewhere?
No, it's just the next one. We're going to end up doing this whole season. So the next one is The Monster of Walnut Grove. So on Halloween night, Laura and Mary get permission from their parents to walk into town and pull off a little prank at the Mercantile. Laura's imagination runs wild when she peeks in the Olsen's window and witnesses Nell's committing an unspeakable crime. Scarred by what she has seen, Laura can't get anyone to believe her.
I remember this. I saw it.
Do you remember this?
Yes. I remember this one pretty vividly. All right, guys. So make sure you check out our Blockbusters and all of our other Little House episodes. You can find Jenny and me on Facebook, Instagram. And I need to make an appeal, Jenny.
What?
Please, if you enjoy what you're hearing, leave us a 5-star review on Apple iTunes. That helps us rise up in the search results.
That's right. And very good.
That's what we want. Right, Jenny? Did I figure that out properly?
Yeah, good job.
Don't ask me to multiply by 3. So if you have a few minutes, just scoot over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. You can even say, like, Amy is awesome. Amy is better than Jenny. We love Amy. Amy fan club.
She needs it. She already has one fan club. That's not enough.
Anything you want to say. The 5 stars, like I said, helps us find new viewers and helps viewers find us. So it's a win-win for everybody, right, Jen?
Like, that literally happened. Like, yes. Amy joined and said they found us on Apple iTunes.
So if you could do that, we would really appreciate it. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you soon. Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening. If you enjoy what you hear, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple iTunes. Every review helps new listeners find us and helps us find new listeners. You can connect with Jenny and me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at GenXThisIsWhy. Letter X, spell out the Y. We also have a Facebook group called the Meme Bees, M-E-M-E-B. The link is on our Facebook page. Thanks for listening and see you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.